Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Joseph.
And I'm Nick. And
this is Fish Jelly. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Okay. You just returned from New York.
I did. For less than 24 hours before I have to go somewhere again.
We'll talk about that in a second. But we have a few things to get through. Brad Dourif is retiring.
Apparently, except for Chucky-related things.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Yeah, I mean...
Doing what he wants.
He has done a lot, and he is a... I don't even know what phrase I want to use, but I do really like seeing Brad Dourif.
He's in so many things.
I know.
Like, and, you know, when I watched, like... Sometimes you'll put on things from, you know, 30... 40 years ago, mm-hmm. and he'll just pop up.
Yep.
Like, or, you know, I haven't seen the Lord of the Rings movies. And the other day I was like, oh, can you show the trailers of them to see if that would spark my interest? Which they didn't.
Ooh.
But he's in those.
Yeah. He's, I mean,
so that was so good for him. I hope his money's up.
I'm sure it is. Well, this, his daughter acts now. Right. But he, you know, one of my favorites of his is Wise Blood, which I believe was directed a Flannery O'Connor adaptation. The book is great. The movie's really good too, but John Huston, I want to say, directed that.
There are 6 Rebel Moon films.
Oh God. So coming. We'll probably touch more on Zack Snyder in this episode, but yeah, apparently he wants to make 6 of them. Ugh. I don't know who at Netflix is telling him.
But the first one wasn't well received. And I don't think the second one has been either.
Which just opened this past Friday, which we have not watched yet.
So I'm assuming that the streaming numbers are strong and that's why.
But. I don't know. But I was never really a fan of Mr. Snyder. And
So I saw the LA Times has an article about Giancarlo Esposito. Mm-hmm. He did an interview where he said that before he was on Breaking Bad, he was so broke.
Really?
That he considered being murdered to help his kids financially.
Damn.
So, of course, I saw that headline and was like, let me read about this. So his wife, I believe his father-in-law, someone in his family sold insurance. So he had a nice little insurance policy and knew about it. So knew that if he committed suicide, they wouldn't get the payout.
Right.
So he had, you know, considered finding a way to be killed so that his family could benefit. Because I believe he has 5 children and from like a previous marriage. And so, and things were hard because his acting career wasn't, you know, I guess where it needed to be to take care of all these damn kids.
Well, there could be a conversation separately about why did we have all these children, but okay.
Well, there's that conversation, but my immediate thought was like, I don't know why he would say that, because I think it's also like, well, I'm assuming all of these kids are still alive. So then they're going to know like our dad almost...
Our dad wrote himself into his own film noir.
I don't know. And then of course, you know, my attitude is like, I think there are other solutions. Like, you just jumped right to an extreme.
Well, right.
Because you could just get a regular job. Like, I don't know.
Well, there's that too. How hard was your hustle, sir?
I read the article and it doesn't say like what he tried. You know, like, oh, I took a job as working in a warehouse and that wasn't enough. Or So it just seems real extreme.
That is. But
I didn't book a movie, so I'm going to have someone shoot me, like, and my kids can get the $300,000.
You know what that sounds like?
What?
An actor.
Well, yes.
That sounds like an actor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm so dedicated to my craft.
I'm so dedicated to my children, I would literally die for them.
My craft, but kind of as a side plot, my children, who I got to pay for. Why are you having so many kids, sir? Jesus.
Quentin Tarantino is no longer doing his 10th film.
I guess the one that's called the film critic,
the movie critic.
Oh my God. I thought I was amused because of so much speculation about it's going to be about Pauline Kael. Apparently he asked Paul Schrader if he could redo Rolling Thunder somewhere in there because, you know, Tarantino is paralyzed with the thought that he would go out on a sour note. So this is going to be his last film. It's like, you know, you're putting way too much pressure on it. Do you have a story to tell? Just tell the story. Let's not care so much about what everybody goddamn thinks about you. But it's just like all of these people and this the wasted energy that's gone into speculating what this next 10th final film is going to be about. It's just like, just let it happen. Just let it happen. You know how many other people are telling stories, making movies? Let's focus on them. Jesus.
Lastly, Janet Jackson did a bunch of press last week because she's embarking on this like second wave of the Together Again tour, which she keeps saying is like she has said it. And I've heard like I read in articles that this is her most successful tour. So I'm a little confused. I'm assuming it's because of the money, because I think the production cost of the tour is minimal.
Sure.
Compared to like her first four tours were these huge like productions that were like massive, you know, those are super expensive. I was listening to an artist, gosh, what was her name? Oh, Shakira.
Oh yeah, you
some,
mean
the, some, okay. Some unknown artist.
Some unknown Colombian, yeah.
No, Shakira was saying that one of her biggest tours earlier on in her career, she wanted to have this like large thing on stage. I think it was a cobra. Uh-huh. And she didn't like, she insisted.
Tracks.
Like she put her foot down.
That tracks.
That I want this thing. And it costs millions of dollars to not only create, but to take on tour.
Of course.
It costs so much that even though this tour was super successful, sold out, went all over, she ended up in the red at the end because of this damn snake, I think it was. So I'm assuming that they're saying it's Janet Jackson's most successful tour because it doesn't cost that much. She only has four dancers. There's really no production value. It's just her and four people on stage, which is no shade to her. I actually think it's pretty impressive that a woman damn near pushing 60 can be on stage with four guys and all she has is her hits and her moves. And it is I thought it was a dynamite show. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, getting really good ticket sales.
It's okay to be minimalist.
But she was on like Ryan Seacrest, the Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon.
He's still around.
She did, she was on the Drew Barrymore show. And she did one other show. Oh, she was on the Ricky Smiley morning show. Mm-hmm. But on all those shows, she talked about like there's going to be new music. And okay. Of course, I have to give a side eye because she said that last time. Ain't been no new music. So,
what is no music? Like one song or?
So, I'm going to call out Janet DeMita Joe Jackson that if we don't get new music soon, I'm not going to do shit. I'm still going to go. But
new music. It better be more than one song.
She's promised new music on several different interviews. So. That's what I expect.
Just do an album. Back before she had this damn kid, she was talking about directing a movie.
And then she was supposed to be like producing this documentary about trans women. I mean, a lot of things haven't, well, you know, life happens, I guess.
Life happens. Just ask Tarantino.
Moving on to the restaurant section. A new restaurant in Beverly Hills has opened up called Chubby Curry. And it's in that area that's like Beverly and Rodeo. Yeah. There's that little strip right there.
Yeah, there's a Chipotle, a Jimmy John's, some expensive Mexican.
The shittiest California pizza kitchen I've ever been to.
Not that any of them are good, but
okay. No, they're not. But this one was the worst I've been to. So whenever we usually go there, the only reason we ever go there, side note, neither of us have ever walked on that little part of Rodeo Drive with all the fancy shops where you go up the little, which I think is technically not even Rodeo Drive, mm-hmm. but we usually go see screenings at a screening room on Rodeo. And then last week we saw a screening of Challengers mm-hmm. at a screening room I'd never been to over there as well. But anyway, Every time we go to a screening over there, we're always confused about what we're going to do for dinner because we're generally disappointed when we eat over there. The only good thing about that area, and this is like an insider tip, parking's free. There's a nice parking garage and parking's free for like 2 hours. So for anyone visiting, going to Beverly Hills is not that complicated. Although I don't know why you'd, I mean, I guess you could park there and then walk up that famous little street and come back. But
to me, there ain't nothing worth seeing over there.
Anyway, every time we go over there, I'm thinking, ugh, I'm not going to like any of the food over here.
There's a Cheesecake Factory over there.
There is, but not in walking distance to where that one garage
is. No.
But that Cheesecake Factory is actually kind of cute.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of the one in Redondo Beach. But anyway, there's a new restaurant that opened up over there called Chubby Curry. And my ignorant ass, of course, thought it was Indian food, but it's not. It's a Japanese restaurant. And I have to say, I was very happy with my food.
I was as well.
And I thought the pricing was very reasonable for what it is.
Yeah.
It's still not cheap, but like for Beverly Hills and to be something that, you know, actually tasted good. Mm-hmm. And the staff was very lovely.
Yeah.
A little slow, but very lovely.
It was at my urging because it was that we were about to go into Jimmy John's. I'm like, let's go look at Chubby.
So Curry. I would definitely go back to Chubby Curry.
Which reminded me of Chubby Rain from Bowfinger.
Then we went to go see a screening of. When we went to go see the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, we stopped and had dinner at Dan Dan's Modern Chinese.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
They have these like chimichangas that say they're like oxtail.
Yeah, those are really, we didn't get those though.
No, but do you think they're really oxtail?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not an oxtail expert. I think I've only had that three times in my life.
I don't know if it's Cat Williams or Eddie Griffin have a joke about like, you've never seen an ox, let alone like where are they getting all these oxtails from?
Yeah.
But it doesn't taste, they're very good. They taste like, the meat tastes like, what do you, like roast
yeah.
beef, mm-hmm. like brisket that you pull apart. But,
charred animal
flesh.
We
usually get, they have these really good, like chewy noodles and then we get the spare rib. Mm-hmm. Although last time, didn't you think the meat was kind of fatty?
I still enjoyed it. And you don't really like dumplings, and that's what Dan Dan's known for. So I tried some of their dumplings, which
and
were
unfortunately,
good.
You didn't order a lot because you assumed I wouldn't like them.
Yeah.
And I would have as well. But I actually did really like them. They were good. So there weren't enough. But
that's good. It's an inspiration to go back and try them.
It is. But because we didn't get a lot of food, I was still kind of hungry. So, of course, I wanted dessert. And we tried this place called Somi Somi, and it's like Japanese. Oh, I didn't mention Chubby Curry because I made fun of myself assuming it was Indian. It was Japanese food. Mm-hmm. So you had some sort of like pot that had like, it was interesting. It was very hot.
Oh.
Like the actual pot. It was like a stone pot.
Oh, yeah. The stone pot.
Mm-hmm. And then I got like a curry and it was delicious.
Yeah, it was good.
I couldn't even finish it.
Because
there was
mine.
So much of it. Okay. But then Somi Somi is like this Japanese dessert shop. And they make like, I guess their specialty is soft serve.
Yeah.
And the menu, it had one of those situations where you walk in and there's a tablet. And so you're supposed to order on the tablet. Mm-hmm. And the children who were working didn't even acknowledge our presence.
They were hiding in back.
They were hiding.
Yeah.
And I mean, I know I'm a presence, but I'm certainly like, you know, you can greet me, Jesus Christ. So they look scared and we look confused and certainly no one attempted to help us. So I'm like, well, let me figure this shit out. So we ordered the soft serve and I order the chocolate soft serve inside of cold brew. And I actually really liked it. Initially, it was kind of gross because I was just drinking cold brew because the ice cream hadn't melted. Mm-hmm. But once it melts and you mix it, it tasted like a really good like mocha milkshake. But you got, they have something called taiyaki, mm-hmm. which are like the, you know, like the cheddar goldfish.
Like fish-shaped
waffles that you can fill with stuff. Mm-hmm. But the waffles are soft.
Yeah. So we had Nutella in ours.
So we filled it with Nutella, but they give you a little fish. And then, but then you get to pick soft serve in a cup. So you have this cup with soft serve. And then the fish is like eating the soft serve.
Yeah.
Because the fish is big, like the size of like your fist. Mm-hmm. So the waffle with the Nutella was really good. But then we weren't sure which flavor of soft serve to choose for you. And
Well,
then
you chose.
well, you gave me options. And I said, well, they have a combo. And the combo was
Chocolate.
cookies and cream
Oh.
and matcha. That shit was
No, you
disgusting.
got chocolate matcha.
No, it was cookies and cream and
Are you
matcha.
sure? I don't. I thought it was chocolate, but and then I got matcha powder on it.
No, your combo was matcha with cookies and cream with matcha powder on top. And yeah, that was gross.
I didn't mind it. I like matcha a lot, though.
Ugh. Well, the matcha would have been fine on its own.
Yeah. See, I think the chocolate I didn't need with that.
And it was a little spendy, but I didn't realize what was that, taiyaki or, because you can just buy those by themselves and they're not expensive.
Ooh, we could fill it up with a
Oh my.
Bavarian
Well,
cream.
and then, well, no, these are the, here, let me actually go back because I thought the fillings were interesting. Because you can get a 5-piece for like $9 and they were pretty big. So I would just go back there and get the five little fishies. But they have like Nutella, Oreo, custard, red bean, taro, which I know you like, or
I love
taro.
taro, yeah.
But
Taro,
another one
taro.
I'm interested in, another filling is cheddar. Doesn't that sound
A
interesting?
savory.
So we'll have to go back to that Dan Dan's
Oh,
and
yeah.
go back to Somi Somi.
In New York, I only had two sit-down meals.
Okay.
I was staying in Midtown East, and you can find pizza everywhere that's either mid to pretty decent. So I, had a couple slices of pizza walking around. But near the hotel I was staying at, I ate at a place called Spice Symphony
Spice
on
Symphony.
East 50th, and because they had a lunch special, which actually I thought was a really good deal. So I think they have it daily during the week, and basically you pick like a main, like I picked chicken tikka masala, and then you get three vegetables of the day with naan included, and it's like $18.
Oh.
And when they brought it out, it looked like it was on like a cafeteria tray with each portion of in its own little spot. It with a big helping of rice, and then the manager came over and he's like, just so you know that it's you can what God, what's the word I'm looking for? It's not endless. It's all you can eat, basically. So anything you want more of, you can have more of.
Oh.
And that's not extra.
So you tore it up.
No, I didn't, because I was full by the time I eat the like it's like half a cup of each vegetable thing, and then the chicken, and then the thing I hate about Indian restaurants in LA is they charge extra for naan all the time. Well, they do in New York too, but whatever this lunch specialty was, I got a whole basket of this buttery, beautiful naan to myself, and I got full. But I think that was a really good deal, and the food was good. And then I had dinner another night at this place called Suki, which is actually on the same street on East 50th, which is a Japanese curry place. And I had beef udon and shrimp tempura and a beer that I really liked called Lucky Cat. And I was the only one in there.
Oh, well, that's too bad.
No, I had a book I was reading. I love it. That's the fun thing about New York. It's overwhelming. At the same time, you can, if you just look a little, you can find little pockets of these beautiful places that are serene and yeah.
Okay, Madonna. Anyway, moving on. Films released we didn't cover. Blood for Dust.
This was directed by Rod Blackhurst, who was one of the writers on Night Swim, which is already a check against this. But it stars Scoot McNairy, Josh Lucas, who always hams it up, and Kit Harington, who I also don't really have an affinity for. We didn't get to it.
Rebel Moon Part 2, The Scar Giver. Okay, so as people should know by now, we have a Patreon, and our very first review on Patreon was Rebel Moon Part 1. And I didn't care for that movie. And because it felt like it was obviously setting up other parts. So it just felt like a really long like exposition. Like it just was not very satisfying. And then the final battle led to the Scar Giver. So the problem is, if I watch part two, I don't remember part one enough.
Because it was bland and blah and
Right.
derivative.
So then it's like, oh, I'm gonna have to like, I'm not gonna rewatch it.
God,
So
no.
that's why I wasn't excited about part two. I mean, if someone on Patreon wants to choose that as their selection, that'd probably be the only reason I would watch that movie.
Oh, okay.
Stress Positions.
This is a director. Is it a debut? I'm not familiar with Theda Hamill. But it's about Terry in strict quarantine in his ex-husband's Brooklyn home, cares for his injured nephew, a 19-year-old Moroccan model named Baloul, drawing attention from everyone in his life. It looked entertaining.
The Three Musketeers Part 2, M'lady.
Oh my God. I have not seen any Three Musketeers adaptation, including the one with my girl Faye Dunaway and Raquel Welch from the 70s, which would probably be the first thing I'd watch. But there have been so many adaptations of these, and man, Alexandre Dumas. But this is, and I even like the cast in this, Vincent Cassell, and I love Ava Green, and I haven't watched the part one of this new adaptation by Martin Bourboulon, but that came out.
Lastly, We Grown Now.
I had sent you an invite to a screening for this and you didn't respond.
Oh, We Grown Now. Okay.
Yeah. About two kids growing up in the early 90s in Cabrini Green, directed by Manal Bagh. So I'm sure I'll catch up with this eventually.
Projects of interest. I read that, and I don't know if this was a joke, someone sent me this, that Pamela Anderson and Liam Neeson are going to do a Naked Gun remake.
No, I read that news item as well.
I'll stick to Leslie Nielsen. Thank you very much.
I don't know if Liam can do Leslie. It'll be different. I think Pamela Anderson can do what Priscilla was doing.
Well, I think Pamela could do better than Priscilla because I thought Priscilla seemed lifeless in those movies.
Oh, boy.
But I still enjoy them.
I did too.
The Thursday Murder Club.
Chris Columbus of Mrs. Doubtfire and Home Alone fame is going to direct The Thursday Murder Club with Helen Mirren, Ben Kingsley, and Pierce Brosnan. And, you know, Helen Mirren is somebody I will definitely watch anything for.
The Entertainment System is Down.
Ruben Ostlund. I don't know if we had already talked about this project, but it was the big news was that Keanu Reeves is now attached to Star. And you know Ruben Ostlund because you like Triangle of Sadness.
Oh.
So this is, it's the plot sounds very similar to what he was doing on section two of that movie, because this is set on a plane where the entertainment system is down and all havoc breaks loose.
Oh, well, if it's anything like the boat scene where people are vomiting. All right. Unfortunately, there is an entry in the obituary section. The singer Mandisa died. People know her. Well, I know her. I hope people know her, but she was on American Idol, the fifth season, which was still around the time that I kind of kept track of it.
Oh, she was only 47.
Yeah.
Wow.
But she died, and I think her death is still under investigation, but I know she had like some issues with depression and anxiety. She wrote a book about it.
Yeah.
But I met her once because I went to Chicago before I met, this was right before I met you. I was in Chicago for Market Days, and she and Frenchie were performing, who was also on American Idol. And I was, and like people weren't really, like their little area where she was singing wasn't highly populated because Jennifer Holliday was also performing then. So it was like people were all there, like, people sort of showed up after Frenchie to see Jennifer Holliday.
Sure.
But Mandisa was in the crowd. And so I just said hello.
Oh.
But anyway, I hope her death is not a, well, we'll see what, you know, I hope it's not something scandalous.
Yeah.
But we'll take a break. In lieu of a secret film this week, we have a secret play, a Broadway play.
Yes.
And so Nick, you were in New York because you wanted to see Jessica Lange
on
in
stage,
the,
yeah.
Play Mother Play.
Yep, my fellow Minnesotan that I had a period I was obsessed with her, of course, as a child.
Of course.
Oh yeah, I love. No one can do blonde, neurotic white woman like Jessica Lange.
So this was at the Helen Hayes Theater on Broadway.
Yes.
And it's written by Pulitzer Prize winner Paula Vogel.
Yes, and directed by Tina Landau, who is the brother of the film producer John Landau, who produced among
brother or sister
or sister of John Landau, who produced the Avatar films among many other things. Yes.
What is this play about? It's 1962, just outside of DC, and matriarch Phyllis is supervising her teenage children, Carl and Martha, as they move into a new apartment. Phyllis has strong ideas about what her children need to do and be to succeed, and woe be the child who finds their own path. So, you enjoyed this play.
I did. I was skeptical of the title, which I think I could have predicted was going to be a play on mother play. But yeah,
like torture play or
no, like a performance, like performing motherhood.
Oh, okay.
You know, going through the motions per se,
not like kink play. Okay.
No.
So what is it about? It's a play in five evictions. So that's sort of the breakdown. There's no intermission.
And it's told from the present day perspective of the sister played by, cause it's only a 3-person play, but Celia Keenan Bolger.
So she plays Martha. Mm-hmm. Jim Parsons, who we know from, what's the movie we reviewed where people didn't like that I said he looked funny?
Oh, spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
Well, he did. He does.
He plays the son, Carl, and then the mother is played by the great Jessica Lange.
Yes.
Who has never won an Academy Award?
Girl, she's won two.
Oh.
What?
Played by Academy Award winner Jessica Lange.
No, and in fact, from the Playbill program, because, you know, they have the who's who in the cast for Jessica Lange, has won a Tony Award, 2 Academy Awards, 3 Emmys, 5 Golden Globes, and 1 SAG Award.
And most of you probably know her from American Horror Story.
I know, but I've loved her a long time. Yeah. So it was, to me, it was definitely a treat. But
okay, I'm just going to tell the basic story of a play I didn't see. So Jessica Lange plays this mother, and she plays this mother from the ages of like 37 to
present day,
like her current age, which would be like her 70s.
Currently, the character she's playing is like my grandmother, so a generation before hers.
Anyway. Oh, so she's in her 80s.
Yeah.
Probably. Okay. So anyway, it's the 60s, and Jessica Lange is having to raise her 2 children by herself because their father ran out. So times are tough.
With another woman, yeah.
She's not a nurturer caretaker, so not the best mother, so not surprisingly. And she's mad because she has to have a job. She works as a typist. But it's obvious that she is very close to her son, Carl, like very attentive to him and loving, but is very distant from her daughter, Martha, like won't even touch the girl.
Yeah.
So just to make it quick, we see that Carl goes off to college, and everyone with eyes and ears can see that Carl is a homosexual, except his mother, which, you know, is not uncommon. Mm-hmm. But Carl goes off to college and, of course, decides to come out as gay. And his mother basically disowns him. So Martha, who's left at home with the mother, slowly chips away at that to the point where they even get the mother to go to PFLAG meetings. Mm-hmm. But things come to a head because now Martha has announced she's a lesbian. And she's like... what was in the water? Like, why are both of my kids gay? So she's not happy. But they are sort of all brought back together because, of course, it's the 80s and Carl's gay. So guess what? Carl has HIV, turns into AIDS. He's sick. And his mother, Jessica Lange, has to take care of him. Mm-hmm. But because she's not a nurturer caretaker, that doesn't go well.
6 months, she's like, I can't take it.
So now Carl has to go live with his sister. Of course, Carl dies, and now the mother, Jessica Lange, is old, has Alzheimer's and dementia. So the end of the film is that... The end of the play, I'm sorry, is that Martha has to care for her mother, who is basically senile and doesn't remember her. So Martha chooses to basically pretend she's the nurse, and it's during this time that Jessica Lange will sometimes say to her daughter, like, oh, you remind me of my daughter. She was really sweet and smart. And then remembering that Jessica Lange would never touch her daughter, now we have her daughter giving her sponge baths. And it's at the end of the play that the mother tells the daughter, isn't it nice to be touched?
Yeah.
The end. It seems like it would be a tearjerker.
I was not between this play and a couple of films I watched on this trip, I was crying a lot. I was, you know, the dynamic, which I'm sure for many homosexuals may hit home, this family dynamic, because my parents did not divorce, even though that they probably should have at one point. But my parents weren't touchy-feely, and same kind of dynamic with an older gay brother and a younger sister. And there was a lot of this that read, like, that felt very authentic, which I kind of wasn't expecting to deal with in my glee to see Jessica Lange. Like, oh, I gotta. And I think that it's interesting to see, it's directed by a woman, written by a woman, told from the perspective of the younger daughter. And the gay character is really just an object, a conduit between these two. That was a life raft for the sister and the mother at various parts of their lives, and someone the mother completely rejects. So I think there are a lot of really interesting things it's saying about women from different generations, about intimacy between women. Not everything was perfect about it, certainly. I think especially towards the end, as we're racing through these evictions and from one scene to the next, very predictably, it's like, oh, but it's the 80s. He has AIDS. He's dying. But God, Jessica Lange is so good.
Well, let's talk about the performances. So we can start with Jessica Lange. How does she look?
I think she looks amazing. And she actually dances in it. She has a little dance scene.
Can she move?
Yeah, she's svelte, and you know, you would not guess that this woman is 74 years of age.
Oh, good for her.
But from where I was sitting, I thought she looked fantastic.
Okay, what about Celia Keenan-Bolger?
She was very empathetic. She actually reminded me of that woman I dated in high school that had one leg. Of course, she has both her legs, but she looked like this person.
I'm going to reiterate that in high school, Nick dated a woman who was missing, or she was an amputee or born that way.
She was born that way. She was born formerly
Lady Gaga. Mm-hmm. But you had a friend or some friends who would call her Hopalong.
Yeah, they were quite mean.
Say their name. No, I'm just kidding.
And then
I'm looking at a picture of her. She reminds me of if you mix Linda Hamilton and the Beast from Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, my. Okay.
No?
I thought she was cuter than that. But
y'all need to go to playbill.com and look up Mother Play and look at this picture they put of this lady.
I liked her performance. At first I was a little iffy about it because she's constantly breaking the fourth wall to speak to the audience. But I think by the end it works. I think there's some moments of broad comedy involving cockroaches, which weren't for me, but clearly almost everyone else in the audience seemed to think otherwise.
And then, of course, my good friend Jim Parsons.
I mean, it's odd.
He's playing himself as a teenager.
Yeah. I think I had the hardest time of that in him trying to, I think where his performance is fine and there's the right level of, shall I say, emotionality, but his physicality was very theatrical because it is just the three of them always on stage. And he has to do these short bursts of movement to convey like desperation or he's going to comfort either his mother or her sister during a moment of trauma. And it reads, I just didn't like how it reads. I don't know. And I don't know if maybe he's harder to direct because he's quite notable, but I didn't love it. It felt stagey at times to me, with his movements at least.
Did you take any notes about the play?
No.
Oh.
But a couple standout scenes, of course, when he comes home to visit for college and Jessica Lange calls him the F slur. But
in what context? Like she just blurts it out or is he being difficult?
She's the scene opens with saying like, give me back my key. I never want you here again. Like, and she's like, I think he says something like, come on, you didn't know before. You never figured this out ahead of time about me. And she's like, that my son was an F slur? No. But, you know, just for those of us that have had to have moments like that with our parents, it's, you know, something you don't want to keep reliving. But
What else made you cry?
I you know, my reverence for her, it's hard to see her play such a fucking bitch, but
it's called acting, girl.
It is. But you know, the thing is, I'm very familiar with her career and her filmography. In fact, the secret film that I was going to make you watch that we didn't have time for is to me one of her best film performances, but that will be delayed to another podcast.
Hopefully you're not going to tell us which one.
No, let's hold us all in suspense. You don't remember what it was, even though the DVD's sitting out there.
I don't know.
Okay, see, there you go. Let's keep it in suspense. But, you know, even if, whether you know her or not, like, she brings, like, she just feels like this kind of person. Another great scene is one without any dialogue, and it's at a junction where, you know, both children have come out and they've distanced themselves from her. And the only person at this point she has to talk to is her own mother, who seems also kind of emotionally unavailable to her.
Oh, like over the phone?
Yes. Like there's this scene is without any dialogue. It's Jessica Lange sitting at home and she's smoking actual cigarettes throughout the play.
Oh.
She drinks and smokes and prepares a dinner for herself and eats and spits it out and consults a crystal ball, because she's found kind of like the astrology is a form of self-actualization. But this scene is without any dialogue, and she is, and you know, to do that night after night for the 11-week run, that's a difficult thing to do, to keep the audience's attention.
Wait, how's she talking to her mother if there's no dialogue?
That she's not. I'm saying at this point in the play, that's only emotional outlet is her mother. So she's alone.
I see.
But she, it's just Jessica Lange on stage doing her thing, and it's pretty damn good. Also the scene where Martha is able to coax her into going to P-Flag, and there's a scene, it's implied that they're at a disco, and Jessica Lange dances with both of her children. And
to what song?
I don't remember.
Was it a song you recognized?
No.
Oh, okay.
But I don't think so. But I think I was so distracted by watching her.
Well, it would have been dance. The 80s, right?
No, this is late 70s at this point.
Oh, so was it like a disco sound?
Yeah,
song?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know. It was just really sweet and cute. And
so you cried at that?
Disarming. I think a lot of it felt very disarming.
Did people see you cry?
No, I was sitting off in the corner where I didn't. I always pick a seat where I have at least one side free.
So like an aisle.
Well, there were no aisles by the time I bought my ticket. So I got a deep inside. I was against the wall.
Oh, okay.
And the Helen Hayes Theater is not that big. I have never been there before.
Was the performance sold out?
It was sold out.
Nice.
I believe. And so then there's this man sitting in a wheelchair, and his helpmate or friend, whoever she was, this fucking white lady, she thought she was also going to have a live dialogue with what was going on in the show. Like,
so she was talking to the screen.
Like, oh no, oh no, no, don't do that. And people were so fucking annoyed.
Well,
but
that's just like going to see a movie in Baldwin Hills. That's not what that is.
But it's just like a live play.
I don't mind talking to the screen.
Oh my God. But it was just because it's a smaller space, and everybody could hear this lady who, I don't know if she thought she was talking under her breath, but oh my God, that shit was annoying. But I wait,
like, she was reacting,
or she was reacting, yeah.
Oh,
like to the terrible things Jessica Lange saying to her children.
But it was annoying.
It was very annoying.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well,
but whatever. And then
I prefer that over people talking. Like, you know how people just talk in the middle of a performance or a movie, like,
yes,
not about what's happening.
Yeah, they're just having a separate conversation.
That's so rude to me. But people like reacting is like, well,
a non-diegetic conversation. Yeah. Yeah, that shit was annoying. But I waited outside of the stage door to see if Ms. Lange,
like a groupie.
I stayed again apart away from the throng, because some people's behavior I cannot stand. I cannot stand it. All the fucking selfies in front, like, and out of these homosexual men that are older than me, it's like, what? You look fucking stupid. Well,
you're so easygoing and nice.
I can't stand I can't stand obvious desperation. I cannot stand it. Anyway,
oh, Bianca, I've never seen you like this.
I can't.
So wanton, so cruel.
I can't stand that kind of behavior. But I wanted to see her. So what's her name? Celia comes out. very sweet. Nobody's watching out for her. She does some autographs. The homosexual in question gets his picture with her. Moments later, Jim Parsons comes out and signs some autographs and is escorted to his Uber by the doorman. But the man, the picture taker, was very desperate to get a picture with Mr. Parsons. That did not happen.
Because he said, I want a picture with you.
Jim, take a picture with me. Jim. And followed. I almost tried to get in the car with him. Oh, wow. And then moments later, the doorman's like, everybody's left the building.
Like, y'all ain't gonna see Jessica.
Jessica's like,
Still in there.
She's probably, but she's like, I'm not coming out there. Not with that lady that ruined my beat.
Well, and also she's like, you know.
She's 74. I get it. But and also that it's a busy street right across the way. I didn't know Alicia Keys wrote a musical.
Oh, well.
Hell's Kitchen.
What?
Yeah, that was that. Something else was going across the street that was more popular. So it's just a lot going on.
Only because I just quoted it, I always have to remind people that there is a YouTube video of the time that Lady Bunny and Bianca Del Rio were on the Derek and Romaine show from 2013 that I listen to at least once every 6 months.
Yes,
since 2013, because I used to have when there was OutQ Radio on satellite radio, I remember, and I would listen to Derek and Romaine. I remember hearing this interview live. It's so good. It's also, the interview is right before the cast of the season 5 of RuPaul's Drag Race was announced.
Right.
So there's a section where a caller is asking about RuPaul's Drag Race because, of course, Lady Bunny is friends with RuPaul. Mm-hmm. And Bianca is so quiet. She's been talking shit the entire interview. And then during this section where they're talking about Drag Race, Bianca is like crickets because she's already filmed her season, but it hasn't been announced. So that's one little fun fact about this episode. But if you go to YouTube and you want to laugh, look up that interview.
Oh, before I forget, the one other scene that I want to shout out from Mother Play that I really liked.
Did you cry?
No, it was funny. Why are you so hellbent on that? Crying is natural and human. And we all, if you haven't cried in a long time, there might be something
wrong. I'm just trying to add some pizzazz to this chicken shit gig. Now, come on. Which part did you laugh at? Go ahead.
There's a scene where she's getting drunk in the apartment. And it reminded me of that scene in Official Competition with Antonio Banderas where he's doing the degrees of inebriation.
Is that with Penelope Cruz?
Yes, where she's directing
that. I totally forgot that movie existed.
Oh, I love that
until
movie.
Just now.
Anyway, Jessica is being fed. She keeps making the daughter make her martinis. And after number 5, she's like, she's going through degrees of like, okay, we're regressing into the past she hasn't processed yet, and starts getting first vile about their father that left them, and then kind of waxing eloquently, about the passion that they had for each other and how one of them was conceived.
Oh, Lord.
Like the shit you don't want to hear your mama saying. Yeah. And that ends disastrously and with venom, because when they try to cut her off, she starts getting really shitty with them. But I don't know.
Like most drunks do.
Yes. But the light kept going off on Jessica Lange. Martha would say like number 4, and then the light would switch back on and she's at a different stage of drunkenness. And she is pretty damn good. So I would highly recommend it's only got an 11-week run. I don't know what week it's in, but Jessica Lange's worth seeing on stage.
Mother Play.
Yes. I think she might. Is she an EGOT, or she's very close to being?
What would she have a Grammy for?
Maybe that's what she's missing out on. But, you know, I would have loved to see her do Long Day's Journey into Night, which she won her last Tony for. But we're in luck because there's a filmed version, a movie version of her in Long Day's Journey into Night coming out this year.
What would you give this play?
3.5.
Okay. That's very good.
Yeah. It's worth seeing. Even though I didn't love some of Parsons, it may be just that I am hypercritical of some minor petty things, but he was fine.
He was fine.
I mean, Yeah. I feel like they could have gone to somebody a little. I do find him distracting looking. He's put too much shit into his face at this point. Anyway.
Well, what do we have coming this week? You're going to be out of town again.
Yes. So I'll be. Do we want to say where? No? Okay.
We'll keep it a secret.
Oh, secret, secrets, secrets.
But you're getting, well, you're getting your personality transplant, right?
Isn't what?
Nick's having surgery.
Oh, so you're pulling some Stepford Wives shit on me because I'm not transplanting my personality.
We're gonna swap brains with someone a little more pleasant. So we're not much is happening except on Monday. Tomorrow, the review for Challengers is dropping.
Yeah, but we're probably gonna we'll remotely do a couple.
How? What am I watching?
I thought we were gonna. There's that John Travolta movie. There's that Humane from one of the Cronenberg girls.
Oh, okay. Well, so then we might not be thin.
No, and then I think they weren't offering a screener for it, but that Mila Jovovich, Jennifer Hudson movie.
My God. It's called Breathe, and Common is in it. Yeah. And I knew I had to see it from the trailer. And something about Jennifer Hudson. I love her voice, mm-hmm. but hearing her speak is just, it takes me out every time. I don't think Jennifer Hudson is a very good actor.
She's well utilized.
I also
sometimes.
Don't think she's very smart.
Well, there's that part. I think she was. I mean, she was playing like a crackhead mama in The Inevitable Defeat of Mr. and Pete. But every now and then, I think she is not distracting. But we'll probably review that when I get back because I think we have to see it ourselves. I don't think they're. What do they call it? When publicists tell me we're not soliciting review coverage.
Well, because they know it's terrible.
Yeah.
Anything else you'd like to say?
No.
Ta-ta.